Due to technical difficulties, this morning's show will be a rewind edition of The Serious Side. We'll see you back here next week. And remember, if we're talking serious stuff, it's The Serious Side of The Jay Ryle Show. I'm Jay. You guys have a blessed day, and we'll play a rewind edition of The Jay Ryle Show, Serious Side of The Jay Ryle Show.
This week on The Serious Side.
Now to the incredible story of a woman abducted as an infant more than 23 years ago. Carlina White was just 19 days old when she was kidnapped from a Harlem hospital. That was 1987. Carlina suspected the person who raised her wasn't her mother, and after years of investigating, she tracked down her real parents. Here's the woman who allegedly kidnapped her. Her name is Ann Petway. Officials in North Carolina say a warrant has been issued for her arrest. As for Carlina, she's now back with the family that hasn't seen her in nearly 24 years.
Here are some things my daughters, Sophia and Louisa, were never allowed to do. Attend a sleepover, have a play date, watch TV or play computer games.
What is interracial discrimination?
But when one race discriminates against the race that they are.
Good morning and welcome to The Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Good Sunday morning to you. Welcome to The Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe. And I'm your host, Jay, and of course I'm here, as always, with my co-host, and first of he is the host of the TOD Experience. He's also a teacher and a contributor. I say good morning to the man who gets the first and last word on the Serious Side, Mr. GOG. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Jay. I'm fine. How are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm full of a cold, but hey, listen, I'll cowboy up, and we'll make it happen.
Ooh.
I'm not sure, folks, if you're having some audio issues, but I'm trying to think that I can hear it even through here. So next up, she is the host of the True Purposes Element Show. She's also a teacher and a contributor as well. Let's say good morning to Dr. Princess Bobby. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you, Jay?
Well, your audio is a little bit out of whack as well, so hopefully we'll get these things fixed as we continue throughout the show. We have a great show with that for you, folks. Let's get right into it. First up, you heard the lead-in. A mother and daughter, they were reunited after 23 years. This young lady was abducted from a Harlem hospital 23 years ago, and she had this funny feeling that the woman who claimed to be her mother wasn't her birth mother. So after some investigation, she decided and found out that her hunch was true, that the lady who claimed to be her mother was not. Matter of fact, she really solved an unsolved crime after 23 years. But it brings to mind a bigger question. I'll start the conversation off with you as always, with GLG. You know, the right time to tell a child when he or she is adopted, is there a right time for that? Do you think that, at what age do you tell a child that they're adopted? Now, before I let you answer the question, I know some of you may be saying, well, wait a minute, you guys talked about this. We talked about this, I think, on the Jay Ryle Show. But, you know, always when we are in this setting, it's always interesting to get really a true perspective. So, GLG, what say you in regards to that?
I think there is a right time to tell a child if they're adopted. And I think that time is as soon as that child is old enough, or if they're already old enough to understand, you know, everything that's going on, the how and the why and all that's involved. I definitely do think they should be told. And, you know, of course, that's going to rely, depend upon the age of the child and, of course, the circumstances involved. I mean, you know, you've got some circumstances that play into adoptions that, of course, you wouldn't want to sit down and discuss with a 5 or 6-year-old as opposed to a 15 or a 16-year-old, but I definitely don't think, you know, unless there's just some real unusual, maybe disturbing circumstance involved, you know, in that adoption, that that child should not ever be told, and it should be before that child reaches adulthood. That, you know, to not do that, to let it go, for whatever reason the parent deems necessary. I think I can't call it anything else other than basically living a lie. That child has a right to know its history, whether it leads back to an adopted parent or a biological parent, but by no means should a child go into adulthood thinking, you know, that a set of parents or a parent is their biological parent when in case it's not. Because, you know, as that child gets into adulthood or gets older, maybe before it even gets into adulthood, you know, they may want to go back. They may want to reach out for their biological parents. And I know I'm going down a whole different road right now. But, you know, and if that is the case, be that as it may, everybody has a right to know their true history.
Interesting. What do you say, Doctor? Do you think that when is the right time to tell a child that he or she is adopted? Or the big question is, do you even tell the child that they're adopted? So, I mean, what say you?
I say that you tell them as early as you begin to start teaching them. I know you may start teaching the child at 2 years old, but prior to that, before their own knowledge, but. When they are at age where they can understand 5, 6, I think it's okay to tell them. My ex was adopted and was not told until he was a teenager. That causes for problems. And typically, I've known even on not just that case, but another case, a friend of mine, where in which they begin to put two and two together. Then
okay.
They are raised on a lie. I mean, at the end of the day, you've lied to this child. You've deceived them all of this time. So then it becomes an issue of what else don't I know? You know, so I really feel that it is important to be real with our children. And it's okay. We should not assume that they're, you know, they can't handle it. Be real with your child. In the long run, I believe that it can definitely do better for them and say a lot for them.
Now, my question is this, is that when you talk about being real for a child, first of all, is there such a thing as telling a child too soon? Because at the age of 5, can a child really comprehend what you're telling them, that, hey, listen, you know, I'm not your biological mother or father? I don't know. That just seems to me that that's a little too early, don't you think?
No, I do not. A child, okay. in this day and age, a child can, they can play on computers. They can do geometry if you teach them. We
okay.
underestimate the mind of our child. We can talk to them, and you know what else? Not telling your child is like treating it like it's a disease. Is it something bad? Tell them. Sit down and tell them. We love you, and this is what we've done. We loved you so much. We adopted you. Whatever you have to do to tell the child in a manner in which the child can understand, I believe that it is most suitable for that child. Otherwise, I still say I've seen it twice. It damages the child. As a teenager, you think they're old enough, but yet you've spent all of these years deceiving them and having them believe that you are something that you're not.
Well, 8 minutes after the hour, it's the serious side. So I guess the thing is that when you say deceiving them, I don't know, GOG, I think that I'm somewhat torn. I think a child should know that they are adopted. But to me, you know, the million-dollar question for me is when, and I know that's the topic of this set, but when do you tell them? And to me, I think when you say at the age of 5, 6, 7, see, for me, either it has to be early or it has to be late. I don't think you tell a child that they're adopted in the middle, you know, between the ages of, I don't know, pre-K and 12th grade, because I think that what you do is you create a problem for that child from a psychological standpoint, because now, you know, kids rebel when they get to certain ages. And so all of a sudden you get this, well, you're not my mother anyway. I'm going to find my real mom. I just think that it creates an atmosphere that may be unhealthy and may not contribute to the overall success of the young child. What say you?
I agree with that. And I agree with the doctor on as soon as possible. But when we get to talking about specifically how early, again, the determining factor there is the comprehension and intelligence level of that child, because along with telling that child and you cannot split the two up, is, okay, I'm adopted. Why? A five-year-old is not going to be able to understand he's adopted because his mother left him in a trash can. A four-year-old is not going to be able to understand or comprehend totally, may do more damage than good, as a matter of fact, that he or she is adopted because her father killed her mother and the rest of her family. When you got circumstances like that, that's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, even some adolescents can't handle that. So I think that when we start talking about how soon or when, we have to look at and consider the circumstances on why that child was adopted. Now, if the circumstances are something, well, I think in very rare cases can you call reasons for a child being adopted normal. I mean, they're the non-horrific, you know, circumstances, of course, but when it comes down to that child itself, you know, not having or being with their biological parents, they're not going to perceive anything as normal about that. But my point is I think we have to look at, I know we have to look at the why when determining how young to tell them. And then again, there's a flip side to this whole debate or argument, is you have to look at the age of the child, too, when it's adopted. Now, if you're adopting a 13, 14, 15-year-old, okay, I mean, more than likely, that child already going to know what's going on. So, you know, there's a percentage of that, a percentage in this whole argument that you don't have to worry about in the first place. But in regards to small children or maybe adopting them from a baby, it's always going to come back from where I'm sitting as to why that child was adopted.
You know what? If you, you are right about that, Gio. And another thing that I wanted to add, though, when you're telling a child when they're young, you have to use wisdom. I mean, you know, yes, if it was extreme cases such as, you know, murder of a family, you know, something that would be detrimental to the child's mental state at that point, too much for them to handle, then yes, not telling them. But to tell them, and you can tell, that's why it's important, tell them as you would tell a child, but let them know in a very loving way. Especially, there have been times, I mean, in all cases, the children realize it anyways. When they find out when they're a teenager, you talk about problems, that's when there's problems. You talk about mental, affecting them mentally, oh, it affects them in a major way mentally. When they find out when they're in their teens, even as adulthood, when they find out, then they spend the rest of their. I have another friend. She found out when she was an adult. I can't tell you how that caused problems in her family, as well as with her mother. They had an estranged relationship as a result of that for years in her adulthood because she couldn't understand why. And there's always someone in the family that's going to tell you. They may be waiting to tell you as a child. They may be waiting to tell you when you're a teenager or when you are an adult. There are some malicious people that will pull you aside and say, well, you know that's not your mother. You know, so to eliminate all of those challenges, it is just so much better to communicate to the child. And maybe there needs to be in the adoption agency something implemented that will say an effective way to tell your child that they're adopted. In certain age groups, there should be a class like that. But it doesn't, to me, in my mind, remove the you have to tell them. You have to tell them. And teenager, adult, you're pick one. It's all going to be an issue if you wait. Yes, you don't tell them all the gory details at five, but you let them know in a loving way. And then you can communicate to them and, you know, as they get older.
Right. 13 minutes after the hour, it's the Serious Side of the TGRS right here on the TGRS Radio Network. Now, GLG, you brought up something that I definitely want to talk about. You brought up the fact that, you know, the reasons for the adoption. And see, and that's why I think, and I mentioned earlier, the psychological effect. When you start talking about the reasons for the adoption, you know, when you tell a child that basically your birth parents didn't want you. I mean, basically, in some cases, that, well, it all boils down to that. I mean, regardless of what we say or how we say it, it's a situation where, you know, maybe from an economic standpoint, they couldn't afford to have you. Maybe it was a situation where the kid was, you know, born to a crack addict, whatever the situation is, or to a teenage mom, whatever. But the bottom line is that basically what you're saying in a nutshell is that, hey, mommy and daddy didn't want you. And so what type of psychological effect will that have on a child, especially if you tell them during the years in which they are, you know, going through adolescence and things of that nature?
I think that's always going to have a certain degree of an impact if the case is or the situation is that the biological parents didn't want them, regardless of the age, no matter how old they are, because no one wants to hear that they weren't wanted by the very people that were supposed to and were charged with loving and caring for them. So I think that at any age we talk about, that's going to have a psychological impact. Fortunately, children are very resilient. Some of them, depending upon the age, playing a huge factor in this, probably will be able to, no, are capable of handling it better than some, better than most, I think. But, and, you know, they get on with it and get around it, especially, you know, very intelligent children that are aware that this not only happened to them, but it happens to thousands of other children. And then there's some that, you know, and that's the other thing that the adoptive parent is going to have to take into consideration. It may do have long-lasting psychological effects on this child, I mean, leading to long-term therapy or something. And, it plays right into what the doctor just said about, you know, her friend. You know, you may result in an estranged relationship from you and yourself. And this is something that the parents need to consider, have to consider, take into consideration when they sit down and get ready to reveal to a child, you know, you're adopted, all the ramifications that can play from that. I mean, that child can be pushed so far the other way that they decide to run away. Hey, or, you know, here we go, you could push them into depression. And, you know, you may wind up with, you know, some of the things, some of the unfortunate things that depression can lead to. I mean, these are all the things that a parent needs to take into consideration before they sit down, as well as that age, and reveal to a child that, you know, you're adopted. You know, you want to tell them, the average meaningful, well-meaning biological parent, of course, wants to tell them the truth, and should. I'm not backing out from that. They should. But, you know, you need to consider that age, everything that plays into it, and the effects. Really consider the effects that this news may have on them. And then what happens, you know, and this is a question that the adoptive parents should ask themselves as well. What happens if that child says, well, I want to see my parents? And that parent is a mass murderer, or that parent's a drug addict on the street. I want to see my parents. You know, what do you do?
Right. And see, that was my issue.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. That was my issue, doctor. I was just getting ready to go to you. That was my issue. What happens when the child, because then the curiosity kicks in. Because we all know kids, listen, we've had kids. We know we have kids. We know how kids react in certain situations. Mm-hmm. You deal with, you know, the terrible twos from all the way up to when a person becomes 16, 17 years old. When you start dealing with those types of situations, then you know that a kid is more inclined to rebel a little bit at those ages. So then you ask yourself the question, okay, my goodness, now you have a kid that's not only pissed off, they know that I'm not their parent. Now they're going to go out and find their biological mother and father. And
that
individual.
Anyway.
Well, but you know what? That individual may be very dangerous. What say you?
Well, they're going to seek anyways, regardless of however you look at it. But again, if they find out, I still stand, because if they find out when they're a teenager,
okay,
you can't imagine the problems that child goes through. When they start putting two and two together, there's another ball game that you're dealing with on top of the adolescent. It's not easy, first of all, to find parents that are missing, you know, in most cases. It's not that easy, okay? And they may not have success. But if you are an adoptee parent, then you know what? If you're treating that child with love and you're dealing with them in love, there should be no worries. They know they love you, and they know that you've been there for them. It also depends on, you know, I always say this, blood is thicker than water. depending on under what circumstances you received that child, whether the child was a crack baby or whatever the issues were mentally, some things that can affect that child, well, you're going to, if you just communicate to the child and show them love, I'm just going to say it, if you show them love, I've seen it happen. I mean, I even know more cases. Now another one's coming to me. I don't even know how I could think about, forget this. My children's aunt, she adopted 5 children, and they all knew they were adopted. They were adopted under different circumstances, came from one home to another, and they ended up with her. They were supposed to just stay with her for a little while. She ended up adopting the children. They love her. She did not take them from, you know, the parents, and I think one of the children, her parents are still living. But there were some situations that caused for, you know, the baby not to be able to be with the mother. She explained that to the child, you know, and they knew they were adopted. But at the same time, there was so much love and togetherness in the home that overpowered the fact that they were adopted, because the adopted part is not a conversation. That became the love. That was the love act, you know. It's just however you're treating that child. Those problems really, I believe, happen when you have parents that have adopted children to get money and to try to make a living. They treat the children like crap. They have other children, and they cause there to be a separation. You're not in control of your home environment enough where you can communicate to your biological children that you do not separate yourself from your other sister here or your brother here. You are all one, and I love you all the same, and there's love, you know, between the family in that manner. Yeah, there's situations like that too, where you have the kids talking to the biological kids, talking to the adopted children. So you have to be in control of that, and you have to consider all of those facts when you choose to adopt a child. Right. I still say you need to let them know as young as possible, with wisdom, communicate to them, period.
All right. 347-850-1272, 21 minutes after the hour. It's the Serious Side. I have about 9 minutes left in the set. So here we go, and this is what I want. GLG, I'll go to you first. Let's talk about, okay, so give me an age. At what age? You know, I think you may have said at what time, but give me a specific age you would tell an individual that he or she was adopted. What age would you do that?
And
tell me why.
Focus right around age somewhere between 7 and 10. And I say that because that's when that brain starts to develop on that adolescent level where it can start to grasp and at least comprehend on a very basic level things that played into how I got here, why I got here, and how I wound up with adopted parents. I'd focus between ages 7 and 9 under average circumstances, just normal, circumstances where maybe, I don't know, both parents just deceased from something that was unavoidable. I would go
right.
A little earlier, but on a whole, I'd say between ages 7 and 10. I'd focus between 7 and 10.
Okay. And for me, I would tell the child, to be perfectly honest with you, after the child has graduated from high school, and let me tell you why, for some of the reasons that I named during the set. But one of the things I don't want to do is be a distraction for that child to learn. It's already tough being a kid. And so for me to sit here and put that extra burden on the child while I'm trying to develop this person into a fine young man or a fine young woman, I don't think we need that. I think at the age of 18, when they're out of high school or maybe their senior year in high school, whatever the case may be, I think they are at that age where they would understand exactly what's going on. I would tell them the reasons why. I would also break it down. I'd tell them why we got you, where we got you from, and give them the circumstances. And I think that a child at that age, especially making the leap, you know, like the famous song From Boys to Men, or in this case, From Girls to Young Ladies, I think they're able to comprehend that a little better at that age. That's just my thought process. And Precious, I'll give you the last word and give us the ages and the reason why you would do it at that age.
Well, as I did communicate during the set strongly,
mm-hmm.
I would say Anywhere between 5 and 10. I mean, I really believe better. I gear towards the 5 years old, communicating and talking with your child, letting it be open discussion, and then informing them more and more as they get older. That's what I believe. I believe that it's important so that they can begin to under. It's a part of their life, but it's not as if it's a plague. It's not a disease. It's expressed to them love, not just in words, but in action. And you are working together with that situation as a family. I think it's very important.
Okay. Now, we do have a few minutes left. Let's do this, and let me ask you, and I'll start off with you, GLG. Now, some of the things that we named, in regards to telling a child that they're adopted, those things could work against you when it comes to adopting kids. You know, the thing is that we all know this, that a lot of the, you know, usually when people adopt kids, they are adopting babies. Some of the kids that are older, it's hard for them to be adopted because, once again, because of the situation, I mean, obvious situations. So, I mean, and my question to you is that the same reasons we listed as to why we tell a child when or how we tell a child that they're adopted, don't those situations exist when it comes to adoption of kids?
Yeah, they do. They do. But there again, I think honesty and forthrightness is going to have to prevail, and that's a chance, you know, again, the outcome that we're going to have to take as adoptive parents. You're absolutely right. That's one of many things that play into it, and that the child is going to have to be able to comprehend, consume, and digest. But I think we owe it to that child at some point, whether it's 5, 10, 22, to put it all out on the table for them. Or what's going to happen is we basically laid the platform, laid the groundwork, and for them to be raised living what is going to be perceived in their mind a lie. And when it comes, if they find out on their own, you know, some of the things that we're talking this morning, of course, you know, being intelligent, considerate people and parents ourselves, some of the things that we're considering, all that's going to go out the door if they find out themselves. I mean, at that point, for most of these children, you know better than that lying, thieving parent that didn't want me. So I hear you, and you're absolutely right. That would come into play when it comes down to, you know, revealing to the child that they're adopted. But, again, I think that it comes right back down to being honest and forthright.
Yeah. All right, Princess Adi, you have the last word for real this time. What say you?
I just want to say use wisdom in all cases and consider all options as well as all of the ramifications when you make the choice to adopt a child. The circumstances are serious. Your child's life is serious. And it's almost like divorce. When is there a good time to say goodbye? When is there a good time to tell your child it's a tough decision, but you've got to be the one to make it. So use wisdom.
All right. With that said, set one in the books. Tell you what, folks, starting off with a bang as always. Coming up next, we're talking.
Okay, I think we've lost Jay for a moment.
Hi, this is your resident Map of the South, Moms and Little Donnas, kickstarting your weekend every Friday with Ladies First Radio, the J Rouse Show, a show for women, by women. Tune in every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as my co-host Princess Odelia and I discuss everyday issues and offer inspirational solutions. From the East Coast to the West Coast to all over the world, Ladies First Radio keeps it real, spreading positivity one show at a time. So come be uplifted with Ladies First Radio, the J Rouse Show, every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Ladies First Radio, the J Rouse Show, a show for women by women.
And Amy Chua is with us now again. Her book is called Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. Amy, good morning.
Good morning.
This book is causing quite a controversy. So many comments on blogs all over the place, all over the web, including our own Today Show Facebook page. Just some of the things people are saying about you. She's a monster. The way she raised her kids is outrageous, not the mainstream Chinese or Asian way. Another person says, kids need to be kids at some point, Tiger Mom. They are not robots. This is very sad. Where is the love, the acceptance? Children should be allowed to succeed and fail, as both are great lessons.
Welcome back. 34 minutes after the hour, it's the serious side of the TGRS. It happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network. And, folks, we're talking about Chinese mothers versus black mothers. Now, and I think we can extend this to all mothers. You heard the lead-in. Chinese mom this past week, a book was released saying how she would use almost military tactics when it came to raising her kids. And so now it brings up a very interesting question, and now everyone's talking about this. And Princess Audie, I'll go to you first. Knowing what you know now, the fact that she wouldn't allow her kids to watch TV, she wouldn't allow her kids to have video games, she wouldn't allow her kids to have sleepovers, she stressed excellence. If you came home with anything less than an A, you were in trouble. She made them play piano or violin. Knowing what you know now, do we call this extreme parenting, or are we saying, listen, this is par for the course and other parents should take her lead? What say you?
No, it's extreme parenting. Definitely. I think that there has to be a balance in everything that we do in life, including parenting. So to totally denounce everything out of that child's life, you're causing for them, first of all, yes, I mean, there's a time and place for everything. There's a time for you to work hard. As a child needs to be a child. You wind up with situations like Michael Jackson. And he himself talked about how he wanted to just regain his childhood because he wasn't able to play. Then the child doesn't know how to balance the fun things in life. They don't have a balance. I believe in giving my children a balance. I am not one to allow them to sit in front of the TV all the time. Now, that I am. And I, you know, for hours just sitting watching show after show after show after show. First of all, I help to keep them busy, and it has come to the point now they're not interested in sitting in front of the TV all the time. But at one time, I think I had gone too far to the left, where when my children would get in front of the TV, they would sit there, and people would, you know, if I went to a friend's house, they would say, wow, they are really engrossed in that television. And I'm like, oh, I have to bring some balance here, because they act like, you know, like a child hasn't had a meal and they go somewhere and they try to scarf it down. So you have to bring a balance to the child's life. That's my opinion.
Now, okay, well, GOG, let me throw some numbers at you. Okay, reading 1, science 1, math 1, 19, 24, 27. Okay, Chinese kids are, you know, doing a lot better than American kids. So when we talk about this, you know, and it's really, to me, it's called tough love. When we're talking about this, I mean, are we a nation of wimps when it comes to raising our kids? Do we let our kids get away with too much? And she brought up an excellent point about Michael Jackson. Because Michael Jackson, that's one of the things that Michael Jackson did talk about, the fact that he was not able to grow up. He was treated like a man at the age of 3 and 4. What say you?
I think that when it comes to Chinese, comparing Chinese parenting against, you know, alongside Western parenting, I think that's an unfair I don't even think a comparison can be made or should be made. One, you know, China itself is the country itself is based off of censorship. So a lot of the things that this lady's talking about is already mandated by the government. You ever try to watch a TV in China? No child wants to watch it. From what I'm hearing, you're not going to be too interested in the Internet either, because it sends it all up and down. So they're born into a culture, if you would, a stringent culture of censorship and just strictness as a whole. And to take one mother, in this case, this lady that's written this book, and look at her tactics when it comes to raising a child. And then, you know, at the end of the day, evaluate Western moms, be they black, white, or even Chinese again. I don't think that's a fair comparison, because there are some Western moms, some Western black moms, Western white moms that, while not the same incidents, are just as strict as this lady. At the end of the day, though, I think the evaluation should be made on how the child turns out. Yeah, Chinese children as a whole seem to do more academically well than Western children. But there are a lot of other things that play into this that people don't talk about, that if you really want to evaluate the success of parents, you got to look at too, like the Chinese crime rate for adolescents. It's risen almost 50-60% over the last decade. So, you know, we look at the academic side, and yeah, okay, stacked up beside Western children, sure. But the other thing that plays into this academic role is, as we know, there's an influx of Chinese students going into our colleges. As a matter of fact, every year there are more wanting to come that can be accepted or that are accepted. But you got to look at it this way. When you're raised and reared and the investment is put in you to go abroad to continue your education, that parent and that child are going to be a little bit more serious about that education than, say, the average Joe that's got to go around the corner to go to the whole to go to that same university. So more than likely, those incoming Chinese students that are coming into our universities are going to do better than our children because, hey, you know, my parents struggle and you know, sacrifice for me to come abroad to get an education, a Western education. I can't afford to screw this up.
Well, but when we talk about this now, let's really get into the meat and potatoes of it. When you really sit back and think about it, I think all of us as parents, we want our kids to be successful. And so we're saying, look, you know, maybe her tactics were extreme. I think the problems that I had with it, and I saw one of the comments in the chat room, the fact that the young lady would berate her kids. You know, I remember hearing a story about one of her kids made her a birthday card, okay? And when she made the birthday card, her mother said, you know what, this is not excellent, and I will not accept this, and threw it back at the child. It seemed to me, but if you, you know, during the interview with the children, they seem to be normal kids. Some of the kids have, you know, one of the daughters has rebelled a little bit, and so the mother is loosening her leash, so to speak. But when you talk about this, I mean, we want the best for our kids. So why not give them maybe 18 years of just total training? Because, trust me, they are going to be adults a lot longer than they are kids. What say you, doctor?
Well, first of all, I really want to say that there's just importance for us to spend time, okay? I know one of my colleagues has a little daughter, and this is a black male. He spends, I watched him. He was at the library. Oh, he's been at the library for years. His child is now, she's 7. Since the age of 3, I've seen him do this. He spends consistently 2 to 3 hours a day solid with that child in face, teaching her math, teaching her English, etc. She is 7 years old. She knows geometry out of her head. You can give her math problems. She will do the math problems. She knows how to study, an effective way of studying. She's phenomenal. She's a brilliant kid, and she's very focused. I asked her, I ran into them after the holidays, and I asked her, I said, how was your vacation? She said, oh, it was fine. She said, we returned from wherever they were at 1:10 a.m. in the morning, so it was pretty late. She was very, very aware and conscious of things around her, whereas a normal kid said, oh, it was fine, it was good. She knew the times. She knew what time she went to bed. The point is this. The time that the parent spent with that child cultivated that child to the knowledge that she has now. She'll more than likely be another Harvard student. She will know how to balance because they actually teach her how to balance her life, even as a child. You know, she can play. and there's treats for her, and it's done in a loving way.
347-850-1272 is the phone number, 347-850-1272. It's 44 minutes after the hour. It's the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show. Happens every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, right here on BTR Radio. Now, one of the things I want to say here real quick before I bring this next guy in, we're going to start a blog here on the TGRS Radio Network, and one of the guys that's the guy actually will, who will be leading that blog is a guy by the name of Trent. I want to introduce you guys to him, but he has a comment on what we're talking about this morning. Let me say good morning. Let's say good morning to Trent. Trent, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, brother.
Well, listen, I told everyone you're going to be writing a blog for the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the blog and then go ahead with your comment?
The blog is a blog called Let's Talk About Us, and it's a place where we can comment on certain things in the African-American community and how it affects us. I've been writing the blog for a while, and some of my friends ask me why I write this blog about African-Americans in particular. And I told them it's because I can't comment on other problems in the world until I get my house clean. And our house is so filthy and needs so much cleaning right now. I think we waste time commenting so much and talking about other ills in the world and not spending enough time talking about what's wrong with our own.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. So now, what's your comment on this particular topic?
You know, I've been listening to the topic about the Chinese mothers and the African American mothers, but one of the things that people don't know when they're reading this is that Asian American women, ages 15 to 24, lead in the highest suicide rate amongst all ethnic groups, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. So that kind of motherhood takes its toll, actually, on the entire race of Asian Americans.
Mm, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. So what you're saying is that the stress from actually trying to be the perfect being, so to speak, will cause most of these mothers to commit suicide. Now, here's another thing I want to talk about, and of course, Trent, you know, you are a part of the family now, and if you want to hang around and have a conversation with us this morning, you're more than welcome to. Here's something else I want to talk about here. You know, one of the things that we talk about, you know, these numbers, when you sit back and think about the numbers, GOG, okay, you know, Chinese parents are only allowed to have one child per family or per household, right? So, you know, it almost goes back to, tell me if I'm looking at this from a simplistic measure, because one of the things that people always tell me is like, you know what, well, there, you know, when I argue about flying, because for those of you all who may know me personally, I'm not a fan of flying. And one of the things people are always throwing in my face is the fact that, well, you know what, there are more car wrecks than there are plane crashes. Well, there are more cars than there are planes. And I guess my point is to make the transition is, listen, we have more you know, we have households of 3, 4, 5 kids in some cases where parents have to, you know, focus on more than one child versus the Chinese parents, per se, and tell me if I'm looking at this wrong, has to focus on one child and make sure that child has everything he or she needs to be successful. Does that hold a place in this argument, GLG?
Absolutely, absolutely, and you're right. That is one of the things that you're going to really talk about comparing, you know, success rates among the various parents that has to play into that argument. The Chinese one-child policy, which I think affects somewhere around maybe 35% of Chinese parents. You're right. The more children you have, if you're really looking at success rates per child, excuse me, the higher your percentage of a child coming out of maybe 3, 4, 5 household family that someone's not going to deem successful stacked up beside that one one-child Chinese household. And there again, as we all know, as parents, if you got one child, okay, your focus is going on, and it should be, that one child. That's all you have to focus on in terms of raising a child. But when you're dealing with a household of 2, 3, 4, 5 children, okay, your focus is spread out, and then you're going to have to spread it out all over the place. And at the end of the whole deal, there may be somebody in there. As a matter of fact, comparing those children in that same household, there may be a child that comes out of there that somebody is not going to deem as successful as that next child based on and subjective to whatever the individual's criteria is that's doing the judging. I mean, just because somebody looks at this child and says, Amy is not as good as Paul or, you know, the Chinese child, does not mean that child is not successful. As I said, I think you know, we have to look way into the future. When we start talking about the success rates of, you know, children or how successful parents were, you know, this lady's getting beat up. Well, she's getting beat up across the board because of her parenting tactics. But you know what? I have always said, you know, you got to ask the question, is there anywhere in there where she abused the child? And if you're going to answer that no, then I think, yeah, some of her tactics, while stringent, you know, they are her individual tactics. But at the end of the day, if that child's not abused, you know, I don't think that anybody really has the right to call or dictate what level, you know, or the measures the parents institute. Because here's the real truth, okay? And Westerners have been charged with this. I'm not charging them with it, but I've seen the charge over and over again about being lax parents, holding hands, soft parenting methods. The thing is when that child turns 18, 19, or whatever, 20, and goes out into the world on their own, and you need only look at our jails right now, when the authorities show up to arrest someone for a crime or, you know, a deed that wasn't legal, they're not going to hold your hand. You're not right. Going to have soft arm tactics. You're going to get some cuffs slapped on you, and, you know, you're going to be thrown behind some bars, and, you know, there it is. So I think we need to look at, you know, long-term, the effect that some of these, you know, that the actual parenting techniques has. See, what are the parents turning out? I think if the child's still in the house, and hadn't even graduated high school yet, it's too soon to make the call on whether that parent was successful or not.
You're right. Now, what you said, you talked about abusing the child. Now, Prince's idea, Dr. Prince's idea, I should say, mental abuse, I mean, that should constitute something, right? I mean, you know, think about the psychological effect, berating a child, trying to make sure that this child is perfect at everything. I mean, you know, where is the leeway to allow a child to have, you know, a creative or a curiosity, you know, or something like that from an art standpoint? Because think about it, you know, some of the greatest pieces of art were created by Americans and things of that nature. So when you take away curiosity, I can't think of the term I'm looking for, but it's innocence. You know, a child needs to learn. So when you talk about abuse, mental abuse, one could say that these children are going through because they are beaten. I'm not going to say beaten, but they are pushed to be, you know, the very best. What say you?
Well, you know, you brought out a very good point. When you talk about the creativity and what is necessary to actually cultivate a real, rounded human being. Forget whatever nationality, but a human being. And this here, this tactic of just control, is really just a sense of control that is dominating within that culture. When you guys were talking about the debate, the situation of the Chinese and them having the one child, I had to go online to look at that. I'm thinking, did they put that in writing? And it's definitely in writing. Although
exactly.
They are they're attempting to relook at that
right.
policy, but it is mm-hmm. something that actually was written down as a policy.
Right.
It's just a sense of control. That does not create a well-rounded child. It does bring about depression, and it brings about about stress. I have Chinese friends, and no, they have not been in compliance with the one child rule either. I will say they don't have. I haven't seen any with four and five. I have the most of my group of friends that I do have. I've seen them with two children,
mm-hmm.
But I've seen them also operate with them in a sense of parenting as we do in our culture, giving them a well-rounded base and foundation. Yes, piano, or they're always active in some type of instrument or activity, but we all should do that with our children. That's also cultivating the creativity in the child, so that's not harmful. But they are very serious about the academics. There can be a balance in that. Just us parents slowing down, getting in front of our children 2 hours a day if possible. We say we don't have time, but if we knock off 15 minutes here, 20 minutes there, we can actually bring up to that point the that time. And we'll find that even in our lives we'll become more balanced. The challenge has been for many of us, especially in the urban communities, we are having to work extra hard. Maybe you have single mothers that are having to work two jobs, three jobs in some cases, and they do not have the time to spend time with the child. And that's where we lack academically.
Right. You know what? She brings up an excellent point. And for those of y'all who may just tuned in, we have a new member of the family, Trent. He's a blogger. He'll be blogging here on the network. And let me go to him now. Let's talk about this for a second. You know, we talk about, you know, Chinese moms, but we also, you know, also the second part of this thing is Chinese moms versus black mothers, because some would say black mothers are very, very strict when it comes to their children. You know, some of them won't allow their kids to do certain things. So what say you in regards to that?
Well, personally, you know how I feel about politics personally, and it's my personal belief that black mothers are extremely conservative. And being conservative, they're really mindful of who their children are with, what their children are doing, how their children are doing, or should I say, it used to be that way. Black mothers are also very mindful of the making sure that their kids have a sense of creativity. In that, in the past, we spent a lot of time with our kids at church, as a race of folks, and a lot of times we got our creativity at church. Sometimes to the detriment of education, in my opinion. I don't think that as a race of folks, in general, I don't think that we've spent enough time focusing on the educational part as much as we've spent focusing on the spiritual part of our child's well-being.
Hmm. Okay. You want to continue to go along with that? I'm very intrigued with that statement.
Well, you know, for instance, my grandmother, if you, as a child, I watched her with my uncles and my aunts and my dad and watched her with me. And I'm not saying that conduct wasn't important, but I'm sure this is true in a lot of black households. The conduct grade was more important than the academic grade. I grew up with that. I'm concerned with what you made academically, but how did you act in class? How,
right.
You know, were you kind to people? Were you nice to people? And instead of focus being put on, you know, you need to read the American classics, or you need to focus on science, you need to focus on math. It was always, you know, you need to go to church, you need to read the Bible. We got to go to Sunday school. That seemed to be more important, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be. That's a personal choice. It just seemed to be, in my life, more important than academics.
Hmm. You know what?
Wow.
He brings up a very interesting point. 3 minutes before the hour, it's the Serious Side of the TGRS. It happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network. And we're talking about Chinese parents versus black parents. And I tell you what, GOG, he brought up a very interesting point, because it does seem. I mean, when you think about religion, you know, the first thing you think about is, you know, my dear, you know, or you think of Big Mama in church with the kids with the big hats and things of that nature. It seems to me that black or African-American parents, especially mothers, they do focus more on, you know, church and the spiritual being versus education. I mean, do you think that statement is too far out there? What do you say about that?
No, I don't think it's too far out there at all, because the church has always been a huge part of African-American culture in the communities, and probably will continue to be as we go into the future. It's been a part of raising children, you know, as far back as, you know, slavery and even beyond then. And I have to agree with him. There's a percentage of folk out there where, you know, religion comes first and everything else kind of falls in place, you know, under it. And, you know, that's I won't argue with that analogy, you know, that if folk want to take that. But I would say, you know, okay, you know, behind your God or behind your religion, okay, I think that's where you need to start really scrutinizing where your worldly priorities are falling into place. Shouldn't really, you know, I would say have a negative impact academically, economically, if they remain, if those, if those priorities remain in place after religion. But I think it's all going to come down to how high you set the standard for that child. And I think this is where this ultimately is going to go back to. How high and in what areas are you setting the standard for this child? And, you know, are you holding them to whatever the standards you set as a parent, and what plays into those standards?
You know, I'm reading something here in the chat room at Black Achievement America, Black Achievement USA. He writes, I've seen, and Princess Audia, I'm going to read the statement, then I'm going to ask you for your response. So I've seen black boys chance basketball and football to no end, and it is no surprise that if you look at the Big Ten universities, 90% of the players that play are black, but less than 5% of the graduates are black, and we ask ourselves why. What say you in regards to that statement?
I say that what our black children, a lot of them feel that is the way that they're going to make money.
Right.
And they put all their all into it, into cultivating that. I've seen parents do it where they themselves push that child to no end in that regard. Their goal is to become an NBA or NFL star or whatever so that they can sustain themselves in life. It's sort of like do the basketball, do a sport so that you don't hit the streets. Some of these young people, if you go into the school system, so unfortunately, in the urban communities, the school system is horrible, absolutely horrible. Here in Detroit, they've closed down so many schools, it's not even funny. They have even taken art out of the Detroit schools, okay? So there is no balance. So you have these children that are in the inner city. They don't have the education that the suburban schools are offering. And they have basketball courts. A lot of the courts are not even, they're barely standing at the park.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's what they do. So I say that, okay, it's not a balance. Again, just like in the Chinese, they work too hard, and then you have on the black, you know, on the black side, as Black Achievement USA has talked about, where you have students and children that they're fighting for their life. That's what they want to do because they don't want to be on the street. They may not feel that they have academically what is needed to make it in life, so they're going after that dream. So,
you know, Trent, I tell you what, you know where I'm going with this because you've known me for a very long time. Here's the deal. So now why is that any different from what the Chinese parents are doing? I mean, the Chinese parents are saying, look, I want you to be, you know, all pro at education. I want to make sure that you spend every waking hour being the very best person you can be from an academic standpoint because regardless, most of the time, if something happens to you physically, your brain will always be there, of course, unless something really ridiculous happens. But for the most part, you will be mentally intact. It's no different from a father taking his son outside and making him shoot 300 free throws until he comes. He can't come off the court until he makes 10 in a row or taking him out every Sunday to go. I mean, you know, think about it. I mean, we're so obsessed with trying to make it from a sports standpoint or from, you know, think about the Jacksons. We talked about Michael Jackson earlier. Think about how the dad would make them practice to day's end. You know, what's the difference? I mean, it seems to me that both parents or both cultures are trying to focus on making their kids the best, but it really depends on the Asian people want them to be best from an academic standpoint, and other people are saying, look, I want you to either be able to play sports or dance. What say you?
Well, you know, my dad used to tell me all the time as a kid, if you want to know what a man loves, watch where he spends his money. And I say that in thinking that if you want to know what a parent values, watch where they spend time with their kids. It baffles me that some people don't realize that the education doesn't start at the schools. It doesn't start at the schools. And I personally feel very sorry for teachers and administrators and all the people involved with the school districts because they have a heavy load to bear, and that people think, here, I'm giving you my kid. I don't want the kid here, but I want you to make this kid the best they can be. But when that kid gets home and they spend most of their living time at home, there's no education at all. So what do we really expect from the people in the school districts? You know, because we've lost any semblance of that the majority of education is at home. Personally, if my daughter comes home and the teacher tells her she hates it, the teacher tells her, okay, you have to read for 20 minutes. She knows 20 minutes doesn't cut it for me. 20 minutes is doesn't cut it for me. And I explained to her that education you're getting from school is a small part of the big education you're going to get. And the big education you get
is gonna be the education at home. I personally have the American Classics in my house. He has to read the American Classics. We talk about math, we talk about science, but we don't go shoot hoops. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing for parents that do want to do that, but if I would teach my daughter about sports, I would tell her, no, don't focus on being a basketball player, baby. Focus on being Mark Cuban. Focus on being the owner. Let's figure out what that guy did to get where he's at. That's the important thing. You need to be the one that's writing the checks.
Right, right, right. 4 minutes after the hour, it's the serious side of the TGR. It happens every Sunday morning right here on the BTR Radio Network. And, folks, we're talking about Chinese parents versus black parents. And one of the questions that I just posed, and I'll ask you, GOG, next, is, you know, bottom line is that, once again, Asian Americans or Asian parents are saying, look, I want you to go pro in athletics. I mean, I'm sorry, in academics. I want you to be, you know, I want you to be the top draft pick for a company. I want you, like Trent just said, I want you writing the checks versus receiving the checks. So, you know, but then we talk about African American parents. You know, listen, we're all African American. We have to call a spade a spade. And the bottom line is that, you know, I know a lot of parents who, you know, take their kids out, and especially dads, you know, they want their kids to be the next, you know, Michael Jordan, the next LeBron James, the next Kobe Bryant. They spend hours on top of hours making sure that this kid can hone their skill sets. But when it comes to homework, it just seems to me that they're satisfying enough for this kid to make sure this kid remains academically eligible to play sports, but the focus is on sports versus academics. What say you?
I see that all too often, and you know, we would, like you said, we would be lying to ourselves to say it's not present, especially in the African American community. But that goes back to that's parenting focusing on short term cash and what I call phony flash. And it's a mentality that's been part of our culture that stems all the way back from slavery, and a lot of variables play into it, years of denial and oppression and not having the opportunities. You know, and I'm not making excuses, you know, right, for, you know, the status quo, okay, because, yeah, there's still a double standard on some platforms. But the thing of it is, you know, we're focusing on, as I said, the short-term cash and the phony flash. And that's a parallel that a lot of people don't want to make, as opposed to Chinese and some of the other cultures, as you said, you know, focusing on the really true academic part of it that'll sustain a child economically and socially well into, you know, the older years of their life, of course, and therein lies part of the problem. And the other thing is in a large part of our culture that I have seen to this point, we don't focus a lot on sustaining what we earn. We're very adept at teaching children or even ourselves ways to acquire it, be it through the NBA, be it through the NFL, you know, or, hey, in some instances, you know, be it through banking or whatever. But we stop right there. And you know, there again, you go back to the focus as a parent. What are the parents focusing on? What groundwork are they laying in regards to, you know, teaching this child or pointing this child in the right direction where, you know, they can be successful economically, socially, academically, across the board throughout their whole life? You know, not just that period that, you know, they're excelling at football, baseball, whatever it is, or, hey, even in the business world. What happens after then? We're all too often caught up on getting it and then spending it. There's no focus on investing into your future. And this comes back to the groundwork and priorities that we lay in place as a parent. I listen to Trent, you know, and, you know, I'm the same way. Child comes home, you know, and teacher says you're going to read for 20 minutes. Well, in my case, if the teacher says you're going to read for 20 minutes and my standard is you're going to read for an hour, you're going to read for an hour, regardless of what the teacher says, because that's my standard. And I think that we need to be careful, too, with confusing standards with control. It's easy to get them mixed up. And, you know, I hear people say, I don't want to be a controlling parent. Control diminishes creativity. Control brings on depression. And, yeah, if you are a control freak, yes, you can stymie that child's growth. But you have to be careful not to confuse control with a high standard of expectations. And I'm a firm believer in, if you teach that child and you set that standard so that that child aims for the moon, that child's going to fall somewhere in the stars, which is what you're after in the first place.
Trent, I'll give you the last word.
Hey, I couldn't have stated that any better. And right, we're consumer culture. You know, we're consume. And we're not
right.
putting anything away. And I'm not just talking about economically. We're really not putting a whole lot away. If you look at our culture, you know, it used to be that our artists made real art. You know, my generation is a hip-hop generation, and I'll be the first to admit, we're making a whole lot of garbage, man, compared to other generations. You know, and it's kids are just following that culture because that culture has led to a whole generation of parents who are not parenting. You know, we're not parenting as we should be, and again, we're leaving it up to the schools. And I feel so sorry for school teachers, administration, and the people in the district because they have their load to bear. You know, we know our kids are a hot mess, and we send them to school, and then we say the education is bad. Well, that's a small part of it. Somebody needs to refocus America, especially Black America, on that education begins at home, and it's going to end at home. That school is just sustaining. And I'm done with that.
Okay, folks, all right, well, two sets down, we're still rolling. We have one more set coming up, folks. We're talking about black-on-black discrimination. I can't wait to get into it. Trent, hang around. It's the serious side of the TGRS. We'll be right back. Good morning.
My best friend's sister, she had a lot of friends, just not enough time. So she got really good at texting while driving. I mean, she was amazing, but ever since the accident, everything has changed. She still has a lot of friends, but now she has no time. Texting while driving, it's dumb and it's deadly.
This is a test.
As we jump into the second set with laughter, a hearty laughter from Toxic Style. Welcome back in, folks. 347-850-1272.
A show for women, by women. Is your resident, not for the South, my little daughter.
Good Sunday morning to you, folks, and welcome into the serious side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Jazz Cafe.
Powerhouse Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome back. You are tuning in to the True Purpose Development Show. Tonight, we...
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
15 minutes after the hour. It's the serious side of the TJRS. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the BTRS. On the BTR Radio Network. And, folks, we're talking about black-on-black discrimination. This past week, we celebrated MLK Day. And, of course, just like as always, most shows are dedicating a lot of their programming towards the slain civil rights leader. But one of the things you heard during some of the shows, especially what I heard during some of the shows that I visited, was the fact that there were some people back in the day who weren't necessarily fans of Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, matter of fact, one guy called into a show and said that, you know, Dr. King doesn't speak for all black Americans. And so obviously people were upset with that statement, but what he was saying was back in the day, a lot of black business owners weren't happy with desegregation because once desegregation went into full effect, the people had the opportunity to go buy from the white businesses, therefore, which led to a lot of our African-American businesses closing down. So I'll start this set off with you, Trent. When it comes to black-on-black discrimination and that story that I just told, first of all, do you think there's some truth in that, and how do you feel about this particular topic?
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. My mother is from Louisiana, and my mother-in-law is also from Louisiana. And my mother-in-law is a Creole, and I remember her telling me that when she was a child, her grandmother actually told her that dark-skinned people were the devil. And she held that belief until she was old enough to figure out that it wasn't true. You know, it's still prevalent in some parts of our country. My grandfather is, in fact, buried in a cemetery that is split, literally, down the middle. One light-skinned folks, and the other side is dark-skinned folks. You know, but how do we get past it? How do we get past it in a culture where if you're light-skinned, it's king TV? You know, you even have in our hip-hop culture, there's an issue with rappers not using dark-skinned models. You know, how do we get past it?
You know, he brings up a very interesting point, Dr. Odelia, you know, and you know, we talked about this. You know, the movie Doing the Butcher had light skin versus dark skin, and, you know, we seem to laugh and joke about that. But to be perfectly honest with you, when we really and truly start digging, you really see that there's some truth and there's some issues with this. I mean, you know, one of the things I always hear people say is that, you know what, if you want something done right, you need to go to the white man. Because if you go to a brother, so to speak, from a business perspective, you know, 9 times out of 10, there's going to be an issue. And, you know, and in some cases that's true, but what say you in regards to that?
Well, I have a whole lot to talk about on this subject.
Okay,
we
don't
have
we have others,
time.
So. Yeah, that's true. So I was going to say, you know, just be considerate of other people on the panel. Thank you.
Well, and I laugh about it, and I use it to definitely spread wisdom to other children when I see them playing in that, you know, I should say, associating with each other in that regard, the regard of segregation within one's own race, within our race, within the black race. As I was, for many years, I was the darkest in my family. And my family, my grandmother came from a very mixed family. Her mother was Indian and black, and she looked more Indian than black, and then my great-grandfather was an Irishman. And she, in her family, she married a dark man just to stop the stigma. When I was young, some of my family, you could not tell. You can't tell if they're black or white. They look white. And I had been pointed out, even as a child, in my face, you know, whose child is this, you know? And that was the comment one day to my grandmother. One of her cousins walked up to her, and I was standing by my grandmother, and the lady looked at me, and she said, "Oh, Audrey, whose child is this?" You know, and my grandmother, you know, of course, that didn't sit well with her. And then later on, I was going to marry someone in my early 20s, and my ex-fiancé at that time was dark-skinned. Now, we did not separate because of that, but I remember one morning my grandmother got me up. We had breakfast, and she set me at the table to tell me, "Now listen, honey, you know the problems that you've had. Consider your children. He's too dark." So we've dealt with this, and I was telling someone the other day, we go right back. Actually, no, I was talking on the phone. And we go right back to the Lynch letter. when you write something down and make it clear, believe it, it comes to pass. That should be a message for all of us. We need to cancel out whatever comes from that Lynch letter, because he said it. We won't have to fight, and I'm paraphrasing, but in other words, we won't have to kill them. They'll kill themselves. And that segregation was built from the beginning. You know, so we're dealing with what was stated for us, and because of our ignorance of those things, we have just let life take its course in our own race, and it is very much a shame.
Right. 21 minutes after the hour, it's the Serious Side of the TGRS. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS radio network. GOG, you know, let's talk about it, because, you know, when we talk about black-on-black discrimination, you know, the topic or the example that I gave before I yielded to the doctor, I mean, that's prevalent in what we do. I mean, the bottom line is, it's like, we won't do business with our own. But in fairness, I mean, don't we deserve some of this? When we say that, you know, people always come to you and say, you need to do business with African-American businesses. Well, if African-American businesses are not doing the things that they need to do, I mean, we shouldn't be obligated to, you know, do business with them if they're not doing business the right way, right?
I agree. And that discrimination among the businesses is self-perpetuating. And
right.
It's a twofold issue, too, both on the consumer end and on the business owner end. And the reason I say that is a lot of African-American businesses, and I go back to a time and an era that Trent brought up. I was born and raised in the rural segregated South, and actually was, you know, in school during the time of desegregation with the schools as well as the businesses. They were going through that transition. And what I've witnessed and still witness today in a lot of cases is that black business owners seem to harbor, if you would, a sense of entitlement when it comes to serving black consumers, meaning they expect their business to be patronized by blacks simply because the consumer is black. You know, you should come in here and support me because I'm black, not because my product is a quality product or I'm pushing the best price. And out of that, you know, you get the black consumer that, of course, you know, they're going to repel this. And a lot of times that gets tagged or identified, and in some instances, I guess it is what it is. You know, it's discrimination. But then on the other side of that, as I said, it's twofold. The black consumer, a lot of times, they harbor a sense of entitlement. Hey,
right.
And we've all heard it. It's a word that's not new to anybody, and I'm sure the listeners have heard it up and down, probably even used it a couple times ourselves. Hey, I need a hookup.
Right.
You don't walk into a Macy's and ask for a hookup. But you go in Willie's Five and Dime or, you know, Willie's Fried Chicken, and the first thing you want is a hookup. You don't go in KFC and want a hookup. You know, when it comes to doing business, when we're talking in the business aspect of it, that's the problem right there. That ultimately gets perceived is, and whether it is in some cases, I guess we'll have to make individual calls, as discrimination. And in regards to interracial discrimination based on skin color, yes, that's been with us ever since we've been here. We went through the era where, you know, women would only date light-skinned guys, and we went through the era where men only dated light-skinned women with straight hair, and then, of course, that propels us into the whole hair thing. And Chris Rock, I believe, produced a movie on the whole hair thing, and then we got into, well, why do black women do these things with their hair? Are they not pleased with themselves? You know, ultimately I wrote that off as black women just being fortunate to have the greater hair that they can, and it's so diverse they can experiment with, you know, more styles than their ethnic sorority sisters. You know, just because, you know, a black woman straightens her hair doesn't necessarily mean she's discriminating against her race or has some kind of psychological issues going on. But be that as it may, yes, interracial discrimination exists, and it still exists. It's that crab mentality that is in that whole mix, too. There are a huge percentage of us that, you know, as opposed to letting the other one get ahead, exhale, propel the other one up, you know, so that, you know, the rest of us can prosper from whomever, whatever it is that's got them there. We reach up, pull them down, won't support the businesses, you know, or what they stand for. And it's unfortunate here in 2011. It's still prevalent.
Yeah, he's right. He's right. He is absolutely correct. 26 minutes after the hour, it's the serious side of the TGRS, and people are saying that this is a topic that we could spend a whole show on, so maybe we'll do a part two next Sunday. But let me go to you, Trent, because I read something in the chat room by Cavania Man, and he wrote, desegregation helped expose the skin color elite. And so, in other words, I think he's saying the same thing that we all have been saying, is that, you know, there is discrimination amongst, you know, dark skin and light skin. I mean, there are a lot of brothers that would prefer to have, you know, a light-skinned sister, or, you use their terms, red bone, versus to having, a dark sister. And so, you know, when we talk about discrimination amongst ourselves, how can we, you know, bitch and complain, and sorry for the French, but how can we bitch and complain about what the white man, or the man, this so-called man, is doing to us when we do this amongst ourselves?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that we should be complaining about what they're doing. Like I said previously, there's a lot of complaining about other folks when, you know, our house is pretty filthy. We got to fix our own house. And, you know, personally, I think that's a generation loss, or generations lost to that. But it's, now the issue is, where do we start with fixing it? Where do we start with telling our kids that you're not ugly because of your skin color? Your skin color is beautiful. It's funny to me because I have two kids in my house. I'm dark. I'm very dark. My wife is very fair-skinned. My daughter's fair-skinned, and my son is dark like me. It's almost like mini-me. She looks just like her mother, and he looks just like me.
That is for sure.
But I'm
spitting him out. Thank God.
I often think about, am I going to have this talk with my son one day? When he starts to go to school with his sister, are people going to treat him differently because his sister is light-skinned? I know, you know, just common sense tells me it's going to be an issue one day. I haven't resolved the issue of how I'm going to address it when it does happen. But I guess I have to start now with telling him how much he's loved. And I also think about what examples I need to give him of people that are dark-skinned that have made substantial contributions to the planet. And just to let him know where he comes from, what he came from, and what we were in Africa when we were dark, you know. And let him know, you know, in the southern part of Africa, there's a lot of dark people. When you start going up north, the spectrum lightens. But, again, it's just like the education thing we were talking about. It starts at home. But people can say that as a solution, but it's very hard to say it starts at home when you got 6 million homes, 6 million people. You know, how do you get a parent to start parenting? And this issue can be fixed if we can get parents to start parenting. But a lot of our issues come from just that.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. 29 minutes after the hour. It's the bottom of the hour right here on the Sirius side. Happens every Sunday morning, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe. And Dr. Odilia, you know, when we talk about this, can we go back to, and I'm going to go back to this premise of business, because I think that for me, the origin of this question was based on the fact that, you know, the young man saying that, hey, Dr. King, he doesn't represent all black people. You know, you had people that, you know, remember Dr. King and Malcolm X were going head-to-head during that time period until later in Malcolm X's life. So when you start thinking about all this, and when you start trying to put all this together and solve the riddle, you know, think about this for a second, and this is something that, you know, I was very, very, very young during that time period, but, you know, I can see where black businesses would reject desegregation, because it's just like anything else. You know, hey, listen, what you're doing is you're taking away my business, because as soon as you say that they can go to the Gold Blacks or the Piggly Wiggly up the street to spend money in the white man's establishment, then guess what? You know, Jake's, you know, hot sausage and ribs, we're going out of business. Because they're not going to come down here and do business with us. So when you sit down and think about that, I mean, to me, they had a legitimate complaint. And I can see where they were upset by this whole desegregation thing. What say you?
I can see why they were upset, but I will say this, as a business owner, I believe it was Gio that was speaking. You have your business. If you have good business, people will come to you. And a lot of times what you find is that a lot of black people do not hold the same standard. They put the business, they kind of throw the business together in many cases, not all cases, because there are some great businesses, black businesses out there, but there are also just the same those that are in just to get it quick and do not hold the same standards. It's almost, well, we won't talk about that this morning, but a lot of them that, you know, proclaim and say, well, we're a Christian business. Well, don't tell me about your Christianity. Show me how you're going to handle business, you know. So we can't just expect things just because we're a black business. I think the same standard holds. I mean, it is tougher for us in some cases and not in all areas. So, but in many areas, it can be very tough for us. But, again, if we go at our businesses very strong, like we talked about in the previous segment, like we teach our kids to get on the basketball courts or whatever, or the Chinese teach their children to work hard for academics, and so do some black people, but more so in that culture, then we have to do the same with our businesses, and we have to learn so that we can have strong businesses. So I mean, that's my opinion when it comes to that.
347-850-1272 is the calling number. Go ahead, GLG.
No, I was just going to say, you know, before we make any progress, we ourselves are going to have to. And Trent has a wonderful platform to build from. I love it because it's the solid truth. We are going to have to clean up. I love the way he puts it. We're going to have to clean up our house before we make any progress,
sure.
And we spend too much time slicing and dicing and analyzing. And I think in a lot of cases, I think it's the shift to focus off of the
that's
dirt
right.
that's in our houses and on
that's
us
right.
so that we won't have to deal with it. And
right.
until we get to the point where, you know, we clean up and deal with our own issues, and interracial discrimination is all too prevalent. I mean, we as African Americans, we, whether we want to admit it or not, we have a problem with skin color. And which makes us, in this aspect, no different than the average white person that does. Case in point, lady I'm dating, very beautiful black woman. I mean beautiful. Skin just happens to be dark, okay? But beautiful woman. I mean in and out personality, whole nine yards. I said to her the other night, you know, you're the blackest woman I know. And I heard the pause. I felt the pause, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I got to straighten this up real quick, because I knew what was coming. What do you mean? Who you call it black? And what I meant was, culture-wise, experience-wise, you know, social-wise, you're the blackest woman I know. And if you say that to somebody, you should try that. I challenge the listeners to try that today. Say that to somebody, and you'll see that it does exist, because the first thing is going to come to mind is, who are you calling black, meaning skin-wise, when, no, that's not the intent at all. And that's just one analogy that you can use that'll yank the covers off of it, that it still exists among us, and we have to deal with this and get beyond it before we can even expect the rest of America to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's 34 minutes after the hour. It's the Serious Side of the TGRS. It's Sunday morning, of course. You know, if we're talking serious stuff, it's the Serious Side. Dr. O'Dea, what say you?
Well, you know what? I really concur with what Gio has said and what Trent has also spoken on, and it's very true. We do have to clean up our own house. I really do not favor the comments, not the comments. I do not favor the constant attention to what somebody else is doing to the black race. So I know every time we bring up these subject matters, I constantly go back to us. Like, get you together and you don't have those problems. If you break down your own walls, you really won't have those problems. Because, I mean, I myself have a lot of mixed friends. I have white friends. I go over to their home, spend weeks, we vacation together. I have Chinese friends, Japanese friends, black friends, Indian friends. I've been invited to all different cultures, the Hindus, whatever. And there's no barrier. It's like, it's almost for that moment, you see it, but you don't see it. We may talk about black stuff or their culture, and we'll communicate with each other. A lot of times what I find is that within ourselves, we have so many barriers, and we think it's this way or that way. That's our energy. That's our perspective. That's what we put out there to the universe and to things around us. When it comes to our businesses, do well with your business. Be consistent. Don't have, I wish, I mean, I I mean, don't do half, you know, blank your business, okay? Don't do that. I don't want to say the curse word here on the station. But, I mean, come on, that's what we see. I see that so often where you just put it together. No, take the time, do it right. Stop saying that you don't know anything about money and then blaming it because you didn't handle your money right. Well, then you, there's things online, tutorials online. Heck, you could probably take a class on finances on YouTube or something. You know, I mean, you make it work. If you know, like, well, Beyonce. People talk about Beyonce. They talk about her performances and her attitude or her confidence or cockiness, as we talked about last night. But listen, she said, if I have to stay up 2-3 days or whatever, I'm going to do that because I want my product to be exceptional. She's not just going out there to sing a song. You know, she's doing a performance, and she's giving it her all. We have to empower ourselves and become stronger ourselves so that we can overcome those statements and comments and letters and lynch letters out there, right, so that we can get ourselves together. I think that is the bottom line.
37 minutes after the hour, it's the Serious Side of the TGRS, right here on the BTR Radio Network. We're talking about black-on-black discrimination. And, you know, and it's always, you know what always gets me, Trent, is that people, when they come to you and say things like, you know what, are you not supporting him? You know what, because you're a brother. You know, our GOG, when you said earlier in the conversation about this hookup, I mean, you know, it to me it's almost disrespect because we'll walk into a place and ask another African-American business, oh, come on, hook the brother up. But, you know, like you said before, we won't walk in Walmart and ask Walmart to give us a hookup. We won't walk into other establishments that are, you know, take your pick. We won't do it. So, you know, why is it do we feel that we have a license to walk in, Trent, and have these conversations with business owners when we won't do this to, you know, our white counterparts?
I don't know. I mean, it's very upsetting to me. You know, my brother is a barber, and I wear dreads, BJ. But when I used to get my hair cut, people used to always assume because it's your brother's barbershop, you know, I got the hookup or somehow I get to skip in line. You know, and I've always told them that from day one when my brother was a barber, one of the things I told him is that this is your livelihood. If I'm going to be your brother, I have to support you. And what you do, I have to come in here and I have to act like a customer. I don't have to act like, I'm not going to come here acting like the brother that's coming here to get the hookup. I need to sit down like any other customer. I need to pay you like any other customer. And I need to do what's respectable in your barbershop just like any other customer. You know, and that, I always felt like I have to lead by example because, you know, like any other barbershop, you get a large customer base from friends and family. And these are people that I've been knowing all my life. So to me, I've always had to lead by example. Now, The funny part is, about 5 years ago, I started walking into stores and I would see white people. And jokingly, I always tell them, "Hey, give me the white people deal. give me the white people deal." And I'm telling you, if you go in there and say that to a white person, they are just starstruck for a second. It's like they don't know what to say. Then I have to tell them, "I'm just joking. Give me the white people deal." I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but. Just going back a little bit to we were talking a second ago, and I had a thought about how much power there is in not blaming others. My dad used to tell me that when you blame other people, whatever the issue is, when you blame other people, you have to understand that you can't control the problem. You can't fix them. So he used to tell me sometimes if you have an issue and it seems someone else, give yourself the blame and then see what you can do to fix it from your perspective. You know, and that's where I get this, we're always blaming white people for our issues. I'm like, you can't control them. So blaming them does us no good. You know, if you say, well, they did it, okay, now what? Can you make them fix it? No. You have to say, okay, this is an issue, and where does my blame lie? How can I fix it? How can I fix this issue? And with that attitude, I've found out in my life, I've been able to fix a whole lot of things. Probably, I've been able to fix a whole lot of things when I say it's nobody's fault but mine. And if it's not my fault, what do I have to do to fix it?
Absolutely correct. Let's get out to the phone lines. Let's go in. Good morning. Welcome into the Serious Side. What's your name and what's your comment?
Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Okay. Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Sarah. First and foremost, I wanted to thank you for having this topic. It seems to be something that no one really, really wants to dig into, if you know what I mean, as far as black-on-black discrimination.
Right.
I would have to say that when it comes to African-American people, I think that the biggest hurdle that they will always have to deal with is with their own, because we have
right.
such a deep-seated hatred, and we feel as though we owe each other something, even though we're not doing anything for each other. Does that make any sense?
It makes all the sense in the world.
Like, for example, you can grow up in a certain neighborhood, leave, become successful. As soon as you come back and everybody can see, all of a sudden there's this feeling, it's this vibe that you owe them something. Even though they didn't, even though everything that you have, they tried to tear down in their own little way. Black-on-black discrimination, in my opinion, crosses the board in so many different ways. I mean, there's other cultures that will hire a black person to discriminate and racially profile their own. I've seen this in numerous times. I sit there and say, why, if you're black, why would you work at an establishment that the people obviously tell you, watch the Negroes, if you get what I'm saying, and you feel comfortable with that? What is it in you that makes you feel as though that you would be capable of doing such a job as that where you obviously are racially profiling your own? But that gets used against us because people from other cultures understand that we are one of the few people that have to deal with what we get from our own and also for the rest of society, because the world isn't peaches and cream, if you get what I'm saying. It's not like all – so we are the only ones that got to deal with coming against our own going against us, along with everybody else. That's what makes black people so unique.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your comments. 347-850-1272 is the phone number. It's the Serious Side. It happens every Sunday morning, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe. And we're talking about black-on-black discrimination. And I think that, let me take a turn here, GLG, because, you know, we talked about this thing where people feel that they have to do business with African-American businesses because you're black. And it goes back to, and let's lead this right back into politics. You know, I had so many people say, well, the reason why I'm voting for President Obama was because he's black. Now, and this is what I said back then, and I know people may not agree with it. I says, listen, I'll give you a pass this time. If you want to vote for a black man for president, I'll give you a pass, because that opportunity is just like an eclipse. You know, you don't see it often. Matter of fact, this is the first time in our lifetime. But when it comes around the second time, you know, it needs to be all issues. And so, you know, when we talk about this, having this allegiance to, you know, representing what's black or what's right, or whatever, what say you in regards to that?
I goes right back to, when I came into the opening segment, I still think it should be based upon basically qualifications, taking the forefront versus skin color. Because when we do that, that analogy right there, when we patronize a business, we vote in a president, or, you know, we vote in a principal in a school or whatever have you, councilman, congressman. Basically, that's racism. That's discrimination. We're basically discriminating against whomever's competing with these people because this person is a different skin color. So I think that there again, and when we stop and really think about it, it's probably an aha or a wow moment. We are simply perpetuating it on another level. I think it should always come back to what you can do, how you're doing it, and how you're offering it. And if it does not stand up, or if you are not up to the standards of your competitors, you don't measure up with your competitors, then you don't deserve to be doing the business, you don't deserve the patronism, you don't deserve the office.
Well, Princess Audia, I'll give you the last word. Go ahead, Trent. I'll give you the last word. Apparently her phone's, her thing is
okay,
go ahead.
Well, you know my politics. Like you said, you've been knowing me. And you know that my politics are the same, on in line with our current president's politics. But
right.
I felt, I have to admit, I felt obliged almost obliged to vote for him, even though our politics are different, because I felt like, you know, this is a real opportunity for a black man to be a to be president, for us to make some history, and that I want to be on the right side of history. You know, I'm like,
right.
when he gets in, I mean, I've been voting for other people for years, and they've been screwing it up. If he's going to screw it up, give him a chance. Other people screwed up, and they've got my vote. So I felt almost obliged, and now that that's over, I do feel like I was on the right side of history. And that, you know, and I probably wouldn't vote for him again because, like I said, our politics are different. But I did feel obliged, and I kind of feel honored that one day I'm going to be able to tell my kids, yeah, I'm going to cast that vote for President Obama.
Well, you know what? I tell you what, he put that was well said, Trent. Folks, see what's happening? He'll be blogging here. All right, folks, listen, that's it. It's in the books. But listen, we're not done yet. Coming up, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made headlines this past week. And Chatterbox, begin putting your thoughts in the chat room.
Thirst quench and chill kind of average and oldie but goodie, but it could never be the average. Guzzle it, sip it, let it flow. You know the speech. We're going to have a hell of a time with drinks like these.
Omówiono najważniejsze sprawy związane z dalszym rozwojem województwa i kraju.
The week that was in the news.
I think the same fantasy has popped into the head of everybody in my business who has ever been told what I've been told, that this is going to be the last edition of your show.
Their husband lives in Houston. Elizabeth Cohen is standing by at the rehab center in Houston where Congresswoman Giffords will eventually make her way. And Elizabeth, tell us what will happen on your end.
What we've been told will happen, Carol, is that she will land and she will go into the Memorial Hermann University of Texas Hospital.
Well, now to a horrifying story of the arrest of a doctor at an abortion clinic, and maybe the Philadelphia District Attorney described it best. I'm quoting him here. My comprehension of the English language can't adequately describe the barbaric nature of Dr. Gosnell. He's talking about Kermit Gosnell, the owner and operator of a women's clinic where police say hundreds of babies were likely murdered over three decades.
It's time for, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made news this past week. And let's start off with Keith Olbermann. Good God, that was a surprise, GOG. Didn't see that one coming.
Shocked me, and that's going to be a loss for cable news network as a whole. He was one of the few, and I go so far to say as the only creditable talk show host on cable news network, MSNBC. It's going to be interesting to see where they go from this. But you know what, Jay? Fox News probably jumping up and down throwing parties that he's gone because he was a big hemorrhoid up in their backside.
You are probably correct. We have Kathleen Williams with us, the host of Adam Before You Go. Adam, where art thou? I'm sorry. So listen, so Kathleen, I'm not sure if you're a big MSNBC fan, but what do you have to say about the scene with Keith Olbermann?
Yeah, I'm a huge MSNBC fan, and I can't believe they fired Keith Olbermann. That was one of the only places I would get news. I hope he goes someplace else. We're in trouble if we don't get him back. But it's time for one of us to get on there. Jay, I think maybe it's time for you to get one of those shows. I'd be up to support that.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. You're making me blush here. Dr. Odelia, the congresswoman from Arizona, she was moved to Houston for rehab, and the prognosis for her looks excellent. What say you?
Well, I say that it's good that she is getting the help that she needs and that she is going to be on a safe return to safe return to, hopefully, to life. Okay, it was very scary what happened to her, and she's going to need more than just a physical rehab as a result of this. She's going to need some time, I'm sure. So, prayers go out for her continued recovery inside and out. She's going to need it.
Well said, well said. Now, GOG, I tell you, this thing in Philadelphia, when I read the news and saw this, I was livid. This guy, they should kill him the same way he killed those babies. Just unbelievable what happened in Philadelphia with this doctor.
That's an awful atrocity. And what's so appalling about the whole situation was he was operated for decades and, killed, and this is just what they counted to this point, killed numerous babies and probably would have never come to light if he had not killed the immigrant mother that went in. I'm inclined to agree with you. I think he should undergo the same punishment that those babies underwent. Just awful, awful.
Absolutely. And Kathleen, you're closer to that situation than we are. My God, what are they saying out there on the East Coast?
Just appalled. People are just appalled that something like that could happen. So, we got a lot of work to do out here. We really have a lot of work to do to bring this world back to a safe time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This week.
Absolutely. All right, folks, it is time for Chatterbox. Final thoughts from the chat room, and let me go first. I have one from Black Achievement USA, and he says, second, how can black people criticize anyone other culture when it comes to parenting? Just look at the jails. That's a good point. That's what we were talking about, Chinese moms versus black moms. GOG, what do you have?
I'm going to go with Gracious One. We are too proud to go back to our roots, and we are not getting educated to be anything different.
What about you, Doctor? Who do you have?
I have a spree radio show Sports are social when you're young, so it is good for developing social skills and team concepts. In corporate, we are always trying to recreate team build situations.
All right, folks, that's Chatterbox. All right, folks, one more break, and we'll be back to put a bow on it after this.
AP Update, I'm Ross Simpson. Friends, family, and associates of R. Sergeant Shriver attended his wake in Washington. His son Tim says not long ago over lunch, he asked his dad how he'd like to be remembered. He says he got a very touching answer.
I'm a man who was born and has tried to live committed to being open to all people, no matter their differences in nationality, race, religion, or geography. I am a man who is full of energy and health. I am a man who takes his responsibilities seriously. I'm committed to doing everything I can to succeed.
Another son, Bobby, says his father's declining health brought his family closer together as they remembered him.
One of the themes that came up repeatedly, I think, was that not only were there many people who felt they were Sarge's kids, as many in the papers have said, but Daddy loved to party.
Shriver's daughter Maria told everyone her father wasn't afraid of dying. I'm Rustin.
Folks, it is time for our final thoughts, another Sunday in the book. And Dr. Odelia, you're up first. Final thoughts.
Well, my final thoughts, I would like to say, as we talked about the subject of black on black and the segregation, I just want to say black business owners, my heart does go out to a lot of them who have, they're trying with all of the knowledge that they have. Listen, some of us have been very fortunate to gain wisdom of some great opportunities in business loans and grants. One thing that I do not like, we don't like to share information as a race. That has to stop. Let's help one another, help build one another, so that we can minimize all of the segregation within our own race. Help
all
in that way.
Thank you so much. Kathleen, real quick, we have 90 seconds. Give us a real quick preview of what's coming up tonight and final thoughts.
Final thoughts today are that I think everybody should really go after exactly what it is they want in life. And I'm a living witness to that. You know, just go after what it is, and everything will begin to line up. We'll talk a little bit about that tonight. And tonight on Adam, Where Art Thou, we have a couple coming in talking about marriage and the importance of it. This couple, Jay, got divorced and remarried. And so we'll be hearing about that, domestic violence, all that. And a lady talking about the blues on Valentine's Day, a psychotherapist. So we're going to have some fun tonight.
All right, good deal. GLG, the man who gets the first and last word here. Final thoughts, big man.
Just continue shifting the blame. Claim and you'll sustain. That's it.
All right, look at that. He's all... And on that note, if it's Sunday and we're talking serious stuff, what time is it, GLG?
It's time for the serious side of the J. Rouse Show.
All right, folks. God bless. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you tonight on Adam, Where Art Thou? Take care, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And enjoy football. God bless.